today is found in the 38th chapter, and likewise in the 39th and 40th chapter of the book of Genesis. We left off speaking to you last week of Joseph, how that he dreamed a dream, and how that he told it unto his brethren, and how that they interpreted the dream and knew the meaning of the dream. And they hated him for his dream. They envied him, because in that dream it meant that they would come down and bow down before him, and he would be Lord over them, and he would reign over them. And this they could not take. They then hated Joseph because of his religion. They seen in this dream something of God, that he intended to exalt Joseph and that he would rule over them. And now Joseph dreamed another dream, and he told his father and he told his brethren this dream. And he said, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars came and bowed down before me. Now this dream, the father, he spoke to Joseph about and said, what? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren come down and bow before thee? He rebuked him for this dream. When he said, shall I and thy mother come down and bow before thee, it was a rebuke, because his mother had died before this already. And this was to pacify his brethren concerning this dream. It was as if he said, this is but an idle dream that you had. But we find that Jacob, he laid these words up in his heart, just like Mary did. He remembered this a long time afterwards, when the prediction of these dreams became true. But to pacify his sons, he rebuked him in this way and said that it was but an idle dream. And now we find that Joseph, he was called by his father to go down to Shechem. His brethren, they were the persons that took care of Jacob's flock. And he said to his son Joseph, doth not thy brethren take care of the flock in Shechem? Go down to them and see if it is well with them and well with the flock, and return unto me and give word unto me. Jacob was concerned about his sons being down in this part of the country, Shechem. Now, this place was 40 miles away from the Vale of Hebron, where Jacob was dwelling at the present time. And Dothan was 8 miles further away, 48. And now he sent Joseph down to this place because the two sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, they had committed such mass murder among the Shechemites that Jacob was concerned and thought probably that the people of that country had risen up against his sons and probably had destroyed them and taken his cattle. So he sent Joseph and called him and asked him to go down to see how they were doing. Joseph, he was an obedient son. He knew that his brothers didn't like him. He knew that they hated him, but he did not refuse the commandment of his father. He was loved of his father, and in this way he showed his love in respect to his father. For if we are greatly beloved, then obedience is a very good sign of our love in return to those that love us. So it was with Joseph. And Joseph, he went then from the Vale of Hebron down to Shechem to find his brethren to see how they were doing. When he got down to this place, why, he could not find them. He traveled all around the territory, and he saw nothing of them. In fact, he got lost. He started to wander around in the fields down there, wondering where they were, and he met a man. And the man said unto him, Whom seekest thou? He says, My brethren, he says, tell me where they are, where they're keeping the flock. Oh, he said, I heard them talking with each other, and they said, Let us go down to Dothan. So Joseph here, he could have returned back to his father and said, They are not in Shechem. But as a faithful son, he thought he would go down to Dothan and see how they were doing there. Probably there was not too much pasture for the cattle in this place in Shechem, so the sons had moved the cattle down to Dothan. And we find Joseph then going down to Dothan, which was 8 miles from this place. And now when they saw him coming afar off, we find that these sons, they plotted, they conspired against him to slay him. They said, There comes that dreamer. Let's kill him. Let's slay him and cast him into a pit. And let's bring back word that he was slain by a wild beast. And then we'll see what will become of his dreams. You see, their enmity, their hatred towards this young man was fierce. It led them to plot and to conspire to kill him. Oh, Joseph knew nothing of this, that they were plotting to do this, that is sure. And now these brethren, when Reuben heard them talking like this, he said, Let's not slay him. Let's not lay our hand upon him and shed his blood. Let's cast him into the pit that's here in the wilderness. Now he done this with the purpose that he would deliver him out of that pit and bring him back unto his father. Now you know Reuben, he had committed a fornication which was not to be even named among the Gentiles. But we see in this that he couldn't go along with this kind of a sin. This is the way sin has the upper hand sometimes. One person is more prone to one sin than another. And now he had been prone to fornication, Reuben, but when they talked about murder, oh, he recoiled at that, and he didn't want to kill his brother. Now, of any of the brothers that was to be jealous, it was Reuben, for he was the firstborn. And Jacob had bestowed all these favors and all these loves upon Joseph, which should have been upon Reuben. But we find that Reuben became his best friend. For it was by Reuben speaking up like this that the life of Joseph was spared. He said, Let us cast him into this pit. They thought, well, whether he dies by starvation or whether he dies by our hand, it doesn't make any difference to us. Let's put him in the pit then. He'll die there anyway. There's no food or anything in the pit, so he'll die a long, lingering death. This is what the other brothers thought. But Reuben had an idea that he would come back to that pit. He would lift his brother up out of it and bring him back to his father, and in that way he probably would be restored back to the favor of his father, for he had committed a terrible sin against his father. And now we find that these brothers, when Joseph came, they took hold of him. They stripped him of his coat of many colors, and they manhandled him pretty fiercely. It doesn't say here in this chapter that, but if you go to the 42nd chapter, we find that when these brothers came down into the land of Egypt before Joseph, and Joseph spake roughly to them and treated them roughly, then they began to say, Verily, what we have done to our brother is the reason why that we're being treated this way. When he, in the anguish of his soul, pleaded with us, we wouldn't hear. And Reuben said, Did I not say, Sin not against a child, but you wouldn't listen to me? Here, they were plotting to kill him and to slay him. Their conscience didn't bother him at all. They were with a seared conscience, these brothers. And when he came and they'd done this to him, they cast him into the pit, and they began to sit down to eat. Surely if they had had a conscience, they would have never sat down to eat. That meal would have never tasted good to them. But it didn't bother them one bit that their brother was in the pit. And so they sat there and they were eating. And as they were eating, they saw in the distance a caravan of merchantmen coming, Ishmaelites, going down into the land of Egypt. Now these merchantmen, they had spicery, and they had balm, and they had myrrh with them, which they trafficked in. They brought it from one place down to Egypt to sell and to make a livelihood thereby. And now these brethren seen these merchantmen coming. And now Judah, this brother, he speaks up and he says, let's not lay our hand upon our brother. He's our brother, he's our flesh and blood, he says. What profit is it in it, he says, if we slay him? Let's sell him unto the Ishmaelites. Then we'll never hear anything more of him. He'll never reign over us when they carry him away down to Egypt. He'll never be king as he said he's going to be, and his dreams interpreted it was going to be so. Let's sell him. Now this man Judah, he was kind of a covetous man. He didn't see any profit in killing him, but he saw that if they sold him, they'd have some money out of it. And they'd never hear any more of him anyway. So the brothers, they were contented. They said, let's do this. So we find that when these merchantmen came, they stopped them. And they sold their brother Joseph unto these Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they carried Joseph with them down into the land of Egypt. Now we have in this that Joseph is a wonderful type of our Lord Jesus Christ. Jacob, the father of Joseph, he sent him down unto the place called Shechem to see how his brethren did. So that great God in heaven above, he sent his dear son Jesus down here upon this earth to save sinners such as you and I are. In love he sent him. And now these brethren of Joseph, they conspired against him to slay him. So he came unto his own, the Lord Jesus Christ. They likewise conspired to slay him. And we find that they took Joseph and they cast him into the pit. So likewise, the Jewish people, they took Jesus. They crucified him. They conspired against him. They hated him for his religion. And they slew him. They crucified him. And they buried him. And now Joseph, he was lifted up out of the pit to be sold and to be taken down into the land of Egypt. It was Judah that did this for 20 pieces of silver. But a man by the name of Judas, the same name, he sold Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And we find that after the third day, Jesus was risen from the dead. And he was lifted up to heaven above to be exalted as the head and as the king of his church. So God's providence over this man Joseph was that he should not die. It was remarkable that these brothers didn't kill him. They were restrained from doing this by the providence of God. And he was carried down into Egypt to be exalted, to be the means in God's hands of saving many people alive. This was the purpose of God in Joseph's life. This we see that he was an exact example of Jesus Christ in this. And now we find that these brethren, they had sold Joseph. And they killed the kid of the goats. They took this coat that Joseph had on him, and they dipped it in the blood of this kid, and they came back to their father with it. And they said unto their father, whose is this? Do you know whose coat it is? Surely he knew who it was. And when he seen the condition of the colt, he seen it all smeared with blood. Immediately he said, surely Joseph has been torn to pieces by some wild beast. He began to cry, to weep, to mourn. This son, Joseph, the one that he loved the most, the one that was his idol, the one that he favored the most, the one that had attended to him better than all the other sons, they had hated him, and they were the cause of this, what was taking place. But they had the impudence and they had the hypocrisy to come with this lie in their hands before their father and ask him if he knew whose coat it was. We could picture this if you are a parent and you have a son. Then you can understand a little bit what was going on in the heart of this man, Jacob. Oh, if you have ever had someone that you love, and that, I would say, became so very sick that death was hovering over it, then in your mind, you've had already a funeral possession. You've seen the child or whatever it was, your wife, your husband, laying in the coffin. And all you pictured all these things before it even took place. And all what sorrow, what grief went on in your heart. This Jacob was having. When they came in this way, then Jacob, he began to mourn. He went into a state of mourning. He put on sackcloth and ashes, and he began to weep. He began to cry. Who wouldn't? He didn't send any of his sons out to find out whether they could find any parts of the body of Joseph or anything, but he just took it for granted that Joseph was dead. There was no question about it. And how that these hypocritical sons had the impudence to come and stand before their father and see their father enter into such a state of mourning without giving way themselves. How they ever kept their faces clean and didn't express their guilt is remarkable. And Jacob, it says in the Bible, that he mourned many days for his son. And all his daughters and all his sons rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. He said, I will go down into the grave to my son in this state, mourning. Now, this was not right of Jacob. Maybe some of you have said this too when you lost your dear one. You thought you were going to go down to the grave with them, mourning, because you have lost the one that was your partner in life. Maybe you lost a child. And then, too, you are brought into mourning. Now, this is not right to say, my hearers, because we don't know what providence has in store for us. It may have, even after such an experience, many joyful days for us. Rather than say, I am going down to the grave mourning for the one that I have loved and lost, it would be better to hope the best. Jacob, he refused to be comforted. It says that all his daughters and his sons rose up to comfort him. Who were these daughters? He only had one daughter, didn't he? Huh? You know scripture? Dinah was his daughter. But his sons, they had been married, and they were now his daughters too. They rose up with their husbands to comfort Jacob in his mourning. They were miserable, hypocritical comforters, those sons, weren't they? They could have comforted him. Sure, they could have. How? Why, they could have confessed what they had done. They could have confessed, we sold him, he's down in Egypt. All you have to do now is send us down there and give us some money and we can buy him back. But did they do this? Oh, no. They left this poor Jacob in this state of mourning. And mentally he mourned for 22 years for the loss of Joseph. And isn't it remarkable that not one of these brothers let it out, that it was concealed so good? It's remarkable. Even Reuben, which I forgot to speak about, Reuben, who had went back to the cave, or rather to the pit, and when he found it empty, oh, he was in such a state too. What am I going to do? Where is the child? And then you don't read anything more. They must have told him what they'd done with Joseph, how they sold him. And we find that Reuben, he must have consented with them to this, for he never said anything either. He never gave out what had happened to Joseph. So these sons, they stood there with faces, hypocritical faces, as if they really were sorry that he was mourning, but inside they were glad. You can make up your mind on that. They didn't like their father because he had showed so many favors and so many lovely things to Joseph that they had not been the recipients of. And they hated their father too. And now they rejoiced in his mourning, but outwardly they appeared they wanted to comfort Jacob. Oh, this poor man Jacob, he went through something in this, my hearers. Some of you have went through something in life too. You actually have lost. But he was just as good as dead and buried to Jacob. And now we find that these Ishmaelites, they had carried Joseph down into Egypt. And when they got down into Egypt, they sold him as a slave to a man called Potiphar. He is called the captain of the guard. This Potiphar, he was in charge of the state prison in Egypt. He had charge of all the notable prisoners. And he was called the captain of the guard because whenever there was a prisoner to be executed, his life to be taken from him, he had charge of that. He had charge of those that were called upon to slaughter and to butcher the criminals. This is the interpretation of captain of the guard. They likewise had a guard that stood around the king, Pharaoh, protected him. He was in charge of that. So this man had quite a position in the land of Egypt. And now he bought Joseph. It doesn't say how much that he paid for him. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver, but how much that Potiphar paid for Joseph, the Bible doesn't give us any account, but he got a good bargain. The Jews, they have a proverb which says, if the world knew the value of a good man, they would hedge this man in with pearls, with jewels. A good man. Joseph was a person that had the grace of God in his soul. And Joseph, he showed this just as soon as he was in the house of this man, Potiphar. Joseph was being taken care of by God. What a mercy, my hearers, when we are young in life, as Joseph was. He was 17 years of age, it says, maybe about 18. And God was with him. Have I any that are 18 years of age listening to me that may have some signs, some tokens that the Lord is with you? I could wish that the Lord was with every one of you. You know, it's only grace if the Lord is with us. It's not for anything in us, not for any good deeds or any good tempers or anything that is in us. Nothing at all, my hearers. It was God's choice of Joseph. It was revealed already when he was a youngster at home. That's why his father loved him so and showed him so many favors. And now he's down in the land of Egypt. He's amongst people that he had never been before. He's a slave. He's taken into the house of this man. Now his brothers, they had stripped him of his coat, but they could not strip him of the grace, of the wisdom, of the ingenuity that God had given unto him. They couldn't take that away from him. And they likewise could not take away the presence of God. It doesn't make where we go in this world. If we are carried away like Joseph was to a strange land, and we have the grace of God in our souls, the Lord is with us. The Lord was with Joseph in the house of this man, Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard. Oh, my hearers, I could wish that the Lord was with every one of you. Have you ever stopped to think what that is? What it has in it when the Lord is with us? Then we have a faithful, a kind, a merciful, a gracious, and an almighty friend. Wouldn't you want him to be your friend? It might be that you have some friends in this world that you are attached to. But all this friend in heaven, my hearers, he's everywhere present at the same time. That's something the friend that you have on earth cannot be. And you can always go to this friend, no matter where you may be upon the earth. Can't do that either if you have a friend here below. Is he your friend? Would you like to have him for your friend? Are there any desires in your heart after him? What a mercy if there is, my hearers. Then it's a proof that he has a desire towards you. We never have any desires after God. By nature, we do not need him. We do not long after him. But the Lord was with Joseph in the house of Potiphar, and he was a prosperous man, it says. Not only was the Lord with him spiritually, inwardly, but the Lord was with him outwardly. He revealed that he was an entirely different person than the Egyptians. He was honest. He was sincere. And he did not worship the idols that these Egyptians did. He must have spoken to this Potiphar about the Jehovah, the God of heaven and of earth, who was his God, who he worshiped, who he loved, who he served. He must have instructed this man concerning this great and glorious and divine being. Couldn't be otherwise. Because you read a little later that Potiphar, he seen that it was because the Lord was with Joseph that he was being blessed. His eyes went open. What a mercy, my hearers, that we may be filled with the grace of God, and that others might even see it. Many times it's hidden. Many times those that have grace dare not come out for him whom they love. The fear of man lays a snare upon their tongue. But in their lives, in their actions, in their dealings with others, it comes out. It cannot otherwise be, my hearers. So it came out in the life of Joseph while he was in the house of this man, Potiphar. The Lord was with him and blessed him. And everything that he put his hand to, the Lord blessed. When he first came there, he had ordinary duties to do. He was a slave. But gradually, this man, Potiphar, he began to see something entirely different in this young man. He soon could trust him with a lot of things that he would not trust his other servants with. And he became such a good man for this Potiphar that he found grace in his sight, it says. He favored him. He loved him. And it got so that he could trust him with everything. You that have men working for you, you that are employers, don't you like to have a man like that? You can leave a man on the job, you don't have to worry about him. You know that he'll do his best, that he's honest, that he's sincere, that he won't steal anything of you. It's a mercy to have such a man, my hearers. So was Joseph in the house of Potiphar. He grew. He valued him. And what did he do? He finally gave him the job of overseer over all his house. In fact, he put everything into his hands. His business, his money, everything that had to be done, running the home, paying the bills, Joseph did. This man, Potiphar, he knew nothing about anything anymore. He so trusted this man, Joseph. Why? Because he's seen that the Lord was with Joseph, and that because of the Lord, he was blessing his house. What state and condition this man's house was in before Joseph came, we do not know. Maybe it was run down. Maybe he was being stripped, and maybe he was become a pauper. But when Joseph entered into the house, there was a big change. The Lord was there. The Lord blessed everything. And the man became prosperous. He became rich, this Potiphar. And now we find that Joseph being in this house, working for this Potiphar, being his servant, the Bible says that Joseph, he was a goodly man. He was of a fair countenance, a beautiful man. Some of the old writers, Greek writers, where they got it from, the commentary says they don't know, but they've written about this Joseph. What a specimen of a man he was, how beautiful he was, how well formed he was. The Bible says so too when he was born. If you read, Rachel gave birth to Joseph, and what a good-looking young man he was. And now he's in the midst of this house, and this woman, the wife of Potiphar, she began to cast eyes upon him. She began to see what a good-looking young man it was. And the devil came into her, and she began to lust and to desire to have this young man. And when he came in one time, she took him by the arm and she says to him, "Come, lie with me." But Joseph, he was kept by the almighty power of God. Let me stress that, my hearers, for if he had not been kept, he sure would have fell. But Joseph was kept. He turned and he said unto her, "Listen," he says, "everything in this house," he says, "your husband has given unto me. There isn't anything that goes on in this house," he says, "that I am not the overseer over. There is only one thing that he has withheld from me, and that's you, because you're his wife." And he says, "Shall I then sin against God and do this great wickedness?" Joseph spoke about his God, spoke about sin to this woman. Oh, had this woman but received this, what he spoke about. Had she but said, "Oh, what am I trying to do? Oh, what a sin am I trying to bring you into?" Then she would have been all right. But she did not do this, my hearers. When he rebuked her and turned away from her and refused to lie with her, this didn't leave her. She still had an eye for him. She still had a desire for him. And he saw this. And what did he do? He avoided her. He wouldn't be in the house alone when she was there. He tried to avoid her in every way. But we find that one time he went into the house to do his business, and there were no men in the house, no servants. And she took a hold of him again. She took a hold of his coat and tried to drag him through the bed, we would say. But he let his coat in her hands and he ran out of the house. He wouldn't have any part of this woman. But this was something for this woman. Oh, I'm afraid that if some of our young men had ever an experience like this, they would give way. If God does not keep a person, they sure would fall headlong into something like this. And how many have not fallen into this sin? And how many fall not into it yet even today? Plenty, my hearers. We can only say it was the grace of God that kept Joseph from falling. Joseph ran out of the house. And now what did this woman do? Oh, what a terrible, wicked woman she was. she got the idea that she'd fix him for this. She said to the men on the outside of the house, she called them in, and she says, he has brought a Hebrew into this house. He's ashamed me, she says. He has tried to overpower me, but I would not consent, and I took his coat, and here is his coat. In other words, I'm giving it to you in the English language, not the biblical language. This was the lie that she told to these servants that worked for her husband. And now she laid the coat up, and she waited for her husband to return. And when he came, she related unto him the same lie. And of course he believed her, it was his wife. And his master, he took him and he put him into the prison over which he was the captain, over which he had the responsibility. For this, inwardly we would say, favored Joseph somewhat. He could have put him in an old prison, he could have put him in a dungeon. He could have resented his, showed his anger in an awful way, but he put him in the prison where the king's prisoners were, probably the best prison in Egypt. And now Joseph, he had one thing in his favor. And I wish we all had that in our favor. He had a clean conscience, my hearers. And that's worth more than all the gold and silver in this world. When somebody accuses us of something that we have not done, and our conscience witnesses that it's not true, we could face the world, we could face God with that, believe me. Just for the incident that they accuse us of. What a mercy it was for Joseph that when he was brought into the prison, that he was free of this sin, that he was not guilty of this sin, that he found access by his God. For if you sin, my hearers, and you do something like this, I won't say that it cannot be forgiven, because the Bible is full of God's forgiving love. But it brings a breach between God and the sinner. We see this in David. He lived almost a year in that sin. And it was God that brought him to himself. And God brought him on his knees, and he had to confess that he had sinned against God. But this we can't do of ourselves either. But Joseph was mercifully kept, my hearers, in this terrible temptation that this woman brought before him. But he had to go in prison, and he had to stay in prison a long time. And for what? For something that he had not done. And now, my hearers, it may be that you might be in prison spiritually. You know, when Joseph came into the prison, he found favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Maybe this Potiphar had talked to him and told him what a wonderful man he had been for him. And maybe he told this other man, I don't believe my wife, but I have to show my authority and show what I believe that she said to me, to her anyway. But anyway, he found favor in the sight of the man that run the prison. God was with Joseph in the prison. You in prison? You in darkness? You're wondering maybe whether you'll ever be brought out spiritually. We read in Psalm 146, bring my soul out of prison, and I will praise thee. What a mercy, my hearers, that God is with his people, even in prison. And that in due time he will bring them out of that prison, as he did Joseph. The Lord willing, we'll take up the story from this point next week. That's all for today.